This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Hey, it's Dr. Jimmy. Welcome to episode 111. Before we get going, I just want to ask that you please go leave me a rating and a review for this podcast. And if you're not already following me on social media, please hop over to Facebook or Instagram and give me a follow. You can find me by searching at Dr. Jimmy. That's at DRJYME. And hey, if you don't like to leave reviews or ratings, I am not above you buying me a coffee. I will happily provide you with my Venmo info. I basically run on caffeine and positive feedback. So if you want to keep me cranking out these content, just fill one of those tanks and I'll keep recording episodes. Today, I want to talk about equine metabolic syndrome, or you may often hear of it referred to as EMS. So the term EMS was first introduced to veterinary medicine in 2002, and that's when researchers started to really connect the dots that obesity, insulin resistance, and laminitis were all components of a single clinical syndrome in both horses and ponies. So 8 years later, in 2010, the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine published what they call a consensus statement in their scientific journal, basically solidifying this concept and outlining the phenotypic traits of equine metabolic syndrome. Now, it was termed equine metabolic syndrome because of its hallmark similarities with the human version, which was called simply metabolic syndrome. In humans, metabolic syndrome is considered a collection of risk factors that are used to assess the likelihood that someone will develop coronary artery disease and type 2 diabetes. So that said, I'm sure that many of you are wondering, you know, what are the phenotypic traits for horses? So I'm going to get right into that. I'm not going to take any creative liberty here, okay? I'm going to basically tell you mostly verbatim what the published literature states as far as the traits of equine metabolic syndrome. So the first trait is increased adiposity in specific locations, or we call that regional adiposity. And adipose tissue is basically fat. Okay, so we've got regional fat depositions or general obesity. Okay, so regional adiposity is characterized by the expansion of subcutaneous adipose tissues surrounding the nuchal ligament. Okay, that sounds like kind of scary wording, but really it's just talking about basically a crusty neck. Okay, so that kind of arched looking neck. The next piece of adipose tissue in specific locations is around the tail head. So development of fat pads that are close to the tail head. The next is fat accumulation behind the shoulder. And then you may also notice fat accumulation in the sheath of males or around the mammary gland region in mares. Now, obesity is observed in the majority of EMS cases, but some affected horses actually can have a little bit leaner overall body condition and only exhibit the fat pockets or the regional adiposity, okay? And then there's other horses that might be just completely normal in appearance, right? So they're not overweight and they don't have the regional fat pockets, okay? So that part can be a little bit confusing, right? There's not always one exact visual appearance to go by. So just keep that in the back of your mind that just because a horse doesn't look like it's an equine metabolic syndrome situation doesn't necessarily mean that it's not, right? So as you go further through the screening and the diagnostics, you might find that horse really, really is an EMS case. Okay, so The first traits were looking for these fat deposits and these fat pockets, right, that I described. The second traits that you're looking for is insulin resistance. Okay, so insulin resistance is characterized by hyperinsulinemia or abnormal glycemic and insulinemic responses to a glucose and or an insulin challenge. Okay, so a glucose challenge, for example, that would be something that would need to be set up and performed by your veterinarian. Okay. They can be done either orally or IV. And it's basically a way to measure the horse's body's response to a sudden load of sugar. Okay. This tells us if glucose and insulin are being properly regulated by the body. Okay. So in that second section, we're looking for insulin resistance or insulin insensitivity. Okay. And then the third trait that is kind of your hallmarks of equine metabolic syndrome is a predisposition towards laminitis. Okay. But not just any laminitis, right? So we're talking about clinical or subclinical laminitis that develops in the absence of a recognized cause of laminitis. Okay, so what I mean there, so examples of a recognized cause of laminitis would be things like, okay, the horse broke into the feed room, ate a whole bag of oats, you've got grain overload, you've got starch overspill from the small intestine into the hindgut, horse develops laminitis, founder, right? That would not be part of metabolic syndrome, right? Like that's a known cause of laminitis. Other known causes of laminitis, you know, colic, colitis, retained placenta in broodmares. So those are all things where, you know, a horse might develop laminitis or might founder, but they're for reasons outside of equine metabolic syndrome. So if your horse founders or develops laminitis for reasons other than those normal, quote, normal causes, that's when we would kind of start to think maybe they might be suffering from equine metabolic syndrome. Okay, so those were the top three kind of visual traits. But the consensus statement also outlines some additional components of the EMS phenotype that really, you know, warrant further consideration when we're looking at these horses. So one is altered triglyceride concentrations. A second is an increased secretion of the hormone leptin. A third one is arterial hypertension. A fourth one is altered reproductive cycling in mares. Okay. So for example, the loss of seasonal and ovulatory period and an excessively long time frame between periods of ovulation. Okay. So I think this is one, it's particularly interesting because there's a lot of people out there who struggle to get their mares pregnant, right? So keep in mind that an overly conditioned or a plain fat mare, right, that might be dealing with equine metabolic syndrome is probably not going to breed up as well as a normal mare in an average body condition. So if you've been out there struggling to get your mare bred, maybe pay attention to her body condition, maybe pay attention to some of these things that we're talking about and see if making some adjustments, let's call it, might help that. Another one that they outlined was an increase in inflammatory markers in association with obesity. Okay. So I think this one is interesting as well because, you know, it's pretty well known and pretty well documented that inflammation is at the root of many diseases within the body. And we know that obesity increases inflammation within the body. So you have people who, you know, like there's these people who are spending all kinds of money trying to feed or supplement with all of these anti-inflammatory ingredients, right? So things like omega-3s and turmeric and, you know, I mean, the list could go on for a while. But many of these horses that are being fed all of these anti-inflammatory ingredients are either slightly or maybe even grossly overweight. So a simpler and certainly much more cost-effective approach to reducing total body inflammation would be to first get the horse's body condition into check, okay? When I say into check, I mean get the body condition or the BCS score to a 4.5 to a 5 on the Hennecke scale. Okay. And so just for perspective, the Hennecke scale ranges from 1 to 9. Okay. So you're landing kind of right in the middle of that. And if you are not familiar with the Hennecke scale, or you're not sure, you know, where to place your horse on that scale, you can do a quick internet search for the Hennecke scale, and it'll turn up all kinds of good charts and graphics and pictures and all kinds of information. You spell Hennecke H-E-N-N-E-K-E. So Hennecke Body Condition Scoring Scale. And those pictures too, those graphics will show you where to look to assess body condition, and also where to palpate or feel the body to check for fat accumulation. Okay. I think one big mistake that people make is they try to just look at the horse's belly. And if the belly looks big and round, they call the horse fat. And that's not fat on a horse, right? The belly can be big. It can be distended from gas or bloat. It can be packed full of a bunch of fiber that's just not very well digested. There's all kinds of reasons. I mean, it could be a pregnant mare, for goodness sakes, right? There's all kinds of reasons that the belly could be really big looking and round and full, but the horse may actually be in a low body condition score, right? So when you're looking at the Hennecke scale, you'll notice that there are certain places where we look for these fat deposits. Along the neck, the tail head, behind the shoulder, along the ribs, right? So there are very specific places that you check to assess the true body condition or the true fat layer on a horse. We don't look at how full the belly is. Okay, so let's assume that you are slightly concerned that your horse may have equine metabolic syndrome, and you take your horse to the vet. What happens? Well, there are several screening tests that your vet will go through, and I'm going to outline these for you just so that you kind of have a grasp over, you know, what your veterinarian is going to be looking at. So first, they're going to ask you for historical information, and it's really important that you provide as much information as possible. Your veterinarian's typically going to be looking for you to say words like, this horse is a really easy keeper, or, you know, stays fat on air, or doesn't take much feed, or, you know, all of these different phrases that we as horse owners use to say that, you know, the horse generally is pretty efficient from a feed and metabolic standpoint, right? The next thing that they will do then is a physical exam. Okay, so they're basically going to go through the body condition scoring system, that Hennecke scale, and if they notice that a horse is scoring anywhere from a seven, eight, or a nine, right? Those are kind of the red flag areas. So a horse that scores a seven on the body condition scoring scale is going to be considered obese, right? So, you know, 7, 8, 9 scores are not good. those would be red flags to your vet that we might be dealing with, an equine metabolic syndrome. The next thing that the vet will be looking at physically is a pronounced crest in the neck. Okay. And there's actually a cresty neck scoring system. That one, I believe, is on a scale of 1 to 5. And so if your horse is scoring a 3 or above, that would be another kind of red flag check that would be in the equine metabolic syndrome possibility frame. Okay. Other evidence would be this, you know, regional adiposity that we talked about, right? So regional fat deposits, specifically the tail head, if the sheath area is holding a lot of swelling or looks really fat, right? A lot of fatty tissue, or the mammary gland region in mares, okay? And then the other physical thing that your vet's going to be looking at are what they call divergent growth rings or founder lines. So these are the lines that are on the hoof wall. And then also would be looking for any lameness that might be associated with laminitis or potentially founder. Then the third thing that your vet's probably going to do, so let's say your horse goes through all of these initial things and kind of every box is checked, like yes. Then you kind of get to this phase 3 where they start looking at fasting blood tests. And in order for the fasting, so We want these blood tests and the results to be as standardized as possible. And so one of the recommendations is that they do fasting blood tests. And so what they will tell you to do is they will tell you to leave only one flake of hay for your horse after 10 p.m., right? Let the horse go all night and through the early morning without any other food. They'll collect the blood in the morning. So we call that a fasting blood test. Now, if the fasting glucose concentration is above the reference range, so greater than 110 milligrams per deciliter, that would be red flag. If the fasting insulin concentration is greater than 20 microunits per mil, that would be a red flag. And then if the fasting leptin concentration is greater than 7 nanograms per mil, that would be a red flag. So those are kind of the general areas that were outlined by this consensus statement. Those are the things that your veterinarian is most likely going to be looking for if they suspect that your horse may be dealing with equine metabolic syndrome. Now, it feels to me like a lot of people are going around calling their horse a metabolic horse, but they're not, you know, they're not getting a true diagnosis. And I mean, I'm not against someone understanding these classic signs and self-assessing and then, you know, modifying the horse's diet and treating them like they are a metabolic horse if they do have all of these visual signs. I mean, let's be honest, whether you go on and, you know, have the fasting blood test performed or not, it's probably not going to change what we would recommend for the diet anyway, right? So in a lot of cases, if we notice the early signs, we can modify the diet and prevent the horse from moving into a really advanced stage of EMS, right? So for example, your horse is cruising through life, doing great. Maybe young horse has been in training with a trainer, you know, maybe been performing fantastic, you know, lots of exercise, doing a lot. And then they maybe move into a different phase of their life where the exercise load goes down. Maybe they're not getting, maybe their diet changes, right? Like maybe they're out on pasture 24/7. Just all kinds of different changes can happen, right? And then all of a sudden, maybe, you know, around 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age, whatever it is, at some point in their life, you notice that, you know, you're like, oh, hey, that, you know, he's really filling out or she's really filling in. And you think, wow, this horse is just really coming into himself. And about the same time, maybe you start to notice that, you know, the horse's neck is starting to get real thick or maybe even just a little bit cresty, right? Meaning the top of the neck is no longer a straight line. So if you were to look from the withers to the pole, you would want that line ideally to be straight. But maybe it's not straight anymore. Maybe you're noticing that there's a little arch in the middle of that line, right? Kind of like a little rainbow shape in the neck, okay? These are your early signs. And if you catch them and you modify the diet right then, you can pull that excess weight back off of your horse and most often just go on about your happy way and you don't have to deal with any of the terrible things that can ultimately happen. However, if you ignore these early signs, or maybe hate to admit it, but maybe you even kind of like the way that your horse looks when they're carrying this extra load of fat, right? Things can start to compound. And the horse will have an increase in inflammation circulating throughout their body. The insulin receptors may start to kind of dull out, meaning the horse's body becomes less sensitive to insulin, which means that it then cannot properly regulate glucose. And eventually, this can spiral into insulin resistance and ultimately lead to laminitis in the foot. Okay. So to bring this home, you know, a horse dealing with laminitis is going to have constant chronic inflammation of the sensitive lamina within the hoof capsule. So just for the sake of clarity, the lamina in the hoof capsule is the soft tissue that connects the inside of the hoof wall to the coffin bone. And when these tissues become inflamed, their connection weakens. Okay, so the connection weakens and it tears apart. That means that the coffin bone, which is supporting all of your horse's weight, will start to break away from the hoof wall and can actually start to rotate downward. And in a worst case scenario, that coffin bone can actually sink and could even potentially fall through the sole of the foot. All of this is obviously very painful to the horse. Even without rotation or sinking of the coffin bone, just a slight amount of inflammation is enough to make a horse a little bit short strided or a little bit tender footed. So it's really important that you pay attention to these things. I think a lot of people kind of write it off to, oh, the farrier must have trimmed him a little bit too short, or, oh, must have stepped on a rock. You know, I think it's easy to write that stuff off, but pay attention to it, because if it's in combination with a cresty neck and fat pockets and, you know, just overall obesity, right, there could be more to it. It could truly be laminitis within that foot. And, you know, when you get to this point, like when you get to where you've got separation of the coffin bone or sinking or rotation, this is when things get really tough to manage. Okay. I mean, we're talking about potentially career ending stuff. So if a vet or a nutritionist ever suggests that your horse is looking maybe a touch overweight, they're not trying to be hateful or mean. Okay. I want to be really clear about that. They're trying to help you recognize the early signs of a really potentially terrible situation that may be brewing without you even realizing it. And I am completely guilty of this too, as a horse owner, right? We see our horses every day and it happens without us even realizing it. They literally get fat in front of our very eyes and we are 100% convinced that they look the same. Okay. I mean, this actually happened to me. It's actually happened to me a few times. It happens to me the most when I'm trying to recondition an underweight horse. Okay. So I set up their diet to be in an excess calorie state, right? So that they'll start to put on weight. Well, 4, 5, 6 months go by and I get used to feeding those exact rates, right? This amount of hay, that amount of grain, whatever. And before I know it, said horse is 50 pounds overweight. And my vet is like, I know you don't need me to tell you this, but you might want to scale back on what you're feeding. and I mean, I kid you not, like this is a real situation. It happens to all of us, right? But the eye will play tricks on you. This is why it's so important to walk your horse over a scale at least once a year and record your weight. That number will tell you if you're staying on track or if you're putting a little bit more weight on your horses every year. Now, let's say you have come to the point where you need to start managing the diet with a little bit more intention. I will lay out a roadmap of the steps that can be taken. And I want you to think of this kind of like a spectrum of options, not necessarily a yes or a no. Because in early or mild situations, you might be able to just implement kind of the basics and be good. But if things have become more advanced, you will probably need to move up the scale in terms of management. And I'm going to lay these out in what I would consider kind of an order of importance or intensity, maybe, starting with the simplest thing and then moving to the most complex management practices. And then I guess keep in mind that they will generally compound on each other, right? So if you have a horse that takes level 5 management suggestions, you darn sure better be implementing level 1 through 4 as well. I think this will probably make more sense if I just get started. So, okay. Number one, first of all, balance the diet to the horse's caloric needs, right? So the majority of horses are just simply being overfed in calories each day. And that is the springboard for developing obesity. So work with a nutritionist, or if you're into numbers and you can do this yourself, right? Just pull up your horse's daily calorie needs on the NRC website. And it'll tell you exactly how many calories your horse needs. So for example, an 1100 pound horse, 500 kilogram horse in light work needs about 20,000 calories or kilocalories per day. Okay. Or 20 megacalories per day, right? Once you know what your horse requires in calories, you then need to test your hay. let's say your hay tests at 900 kcals per pound and you're feeding 22 pounds per day. Okay, so your horse is basically meeting their entire calorie requirement just from hay. So if you then feed 8 pounds of a grain on top of that, let's say the grain averages 1,300 kilocalories per pound, right? You're adding another roughly 10,000 calories into a diet that only requires 20,000 calories, right? That's a big overage of calories. And I am not kidding. I see it happening all the time, okay? So I hope you understand how, you know, that kind of overfeeding would quickly lead to an obese horse situation. This is where diet balancers come into play, right? So if your hay is high quality, you might not be able to feed a grain because you don't have room on the calorie side of things. So in that situation, I personally lean on a supplement called 101 Diet Balancer from Stride. And if you just really want to feed a grain, the only other option would be is if you purchased a hay with fewer calories, right? So many warm season grass hays, Bermuda grass, for example, can be on the lower end of calories, especially if that hay was cut at a later or a more mature state of growth. But the only way to know how many calories are in your hay is to test it. So again, I've mentioned it in the past, but Equa Analytical is the lab that I like to use. They're based out of Ithaca, New York. And it's pretty simple to send that in and have it tested and know exactly how many calories your hay is providing. Okay, so point number two, let's call it level two, right? You need to make sure you know exactly how much your horse is eating each day. Okay, so if you are limiting calories, you have to have control over how much your horse is taking in, right? Having full-time access to a round bale is not an example of controlling intake or limiting calories, right? If you want to control intake, you need to either limit the time that they have on that round bale, or you need to hand deliver or limit feed what they can eat in each meal, right? So either pitch, you know, if round bales are all that you have to use, you've got to flake parts of the round bale off and pitch it to them. Or if you're feeding square bales, right? Flake off exactly how much you need to feed from your square bales and offer that amount at each feeding. Okay, level three, limit green pasture, maybe even eliminate, right? So green pasture is notorious for putting weight on a horse, right? And we all love to see our horses out on pasture. Like, it just does so much good for our hearts. But it can be really bad on your horse, right? So if you have a horse that teeters on the edge of being a little bit overweight, you've got to limit the amount of time that they have grazing green pasture. You may even have to just restrict it altogether, as painful as that is, I know. But especially if your horse has been diagnosed with equine metabolic syndrome, those horses should not be allowed green grass. The one caveat, depending on the situation, you may be able to get by using a grazing muzzle so that those horses can still be out on pasture with their friends and get a little bit of the feeling like they're grazing like a normal horse, but they're just not physically able to take in all that much green grass. Okay, that brings me to my next point, level four, right? We don't want equine metabolic syndrome horses on green grass because green grass is high in sugar, okay? So point number four is to limit the total NSC, or the non-structural carbohydrate, content of the diet. So NSC, or non-structural carbohydrate, is just a combination of starch plus sugar. So a good rule of thumb is to keep the total diet NSC content at 10% or less. Now, you have a little bit of wiggle room here based on the severity of the situation. So if you have a horse that is a little overweight, not bad, but maybe just starting, maybe pushing into like 6 body condition score, right? They've not developed laminitis. They don't have any major fat pockets, right? I might be comfortable with that kind of horse going a few extra percentage points on that total NSC number. There are some horses where, you know, I settle in at maybe a 13%, 13.5%, maybe even a 14% total NSC number, and they do really well, Okay. Now, it's critical that you know the NSC content of the forage. Spoiler alert, green grass has way too much sugar, okay? Especially in the spring and the early summer or in the fall at the onset of cold weather, okay? So if you have a sensitive horse, don't even try to put them on pasture during those times, right? Like if your horse has already developed laminitis or has in the past, just don't even test it, right? What you should do is test your hay and make sure that you're buying hay that is lower in non-structural carbohydrate content, so NSC. Especially if you're someone who wants to also feed a grain or supplements. Okay, so if the hay that you are feeding is over 12% NSC, you have absolutely no wiggle room on the NSC content of the grain, right? Another spoiler alert, sweet feeds, oats, corn, and barley have a very high NSC content, and I recommend that you just completely avoid those things for an overweight horse or for a horse that's predisposed to equine metabolic syndrome. Now, the second piece of math that you have to do is you have to figure out how much total starch and sugar is in the hay, and then how much is in the grain and or the supplements that you're using, then it's basically like a weighted average on the amount of each feed that you're feeding. So for example, let's say I choose a warm season hay like Bermuda grass that has a total NSC content of 8%. I've got a lot of room for flexibility there on my grain and my supplements. So the reason is because if I feed 18 pounds per day of that hay, right? And it only tests 8% NSC. And then I only feed 2 pounds per day of grain or supplements, right? So even if the grain portion and supplement portion is say, 15% NSC, my total diet NSC is still going to be well under 10%. It's probably going to be under 9% at those numbers because the hay is the vast majority of the total weight that's being fed on a daily basis. I get that these numbers can be tricky. So if you're confused at all, I encourage you to work with an equine nutritionist. Okay, level five, this is the last of my nutritional levels. So level five is where I might start incorporating some functional supplements. Okay, so things like chromium, which can help the cells in the body process glucose more efficiently. And I might also introduce some EPA and DHA omega-3s just because of their potential to improve insulin sensitivity. You just have to be careful that you're balancing for calories correctly, because an omega-3 supplement is going to pack quite a few extra calories from fat. So just don't let that one slip by you. But I want to be very, very clear here, right? You cannot skip levels 1 through 4 and just offer chromium and omega-3s and expect your horse to overcome the syndrome, okay? The first 4 steps are critical and they serve as that foundation, okay? These functional ingredients in this level 5, that's just for when you get to this like fine-tuning stage, okay? Now, after you've covered the nutritional aspect, let's call this level 6, right? This is where your veterinarian might introduce some medical treatments, okay? But just keep in mind, these medical options, these drug options need to be done in addition to the nutritional items that I outlined already, right? You can't turn your horse out on green grass and then feed these drugs and expect everything to work and be good. It just doesn't work like that. So a couple things that your vet may suggest. Levothyroxine sodium can be used to induce weight loss in horses, and it can also be used to improve insulin sensitivity, right? So this is something that your vet would just prescribe for a short amount of time, maybe 3 to 6 months. And the intent there is just to really quickly pull weight off of a horse. But again, that must be done in addition to dietary changes and exercise. Another drug that might be used is metformin hydrochloride. That might possibly be helpful in reducing resting insulin concentrations. The research I was looking at was was back and forth a little bit on that one. I'm not sure where they've come with that. Some vets may recommend it, some vets may not. And then the last piece of all of this is just, it is so important to provide your horse with daily exercise, right? Like if a horse is just stuck in a stall all day long and not getting any exercise, that'd be like us laying on the couch all day, every day and expecting us to lose weight, right? You know, daily exercise helps improve insulin sensitivity. It helps burn calories. And it just obviously it helps with weight loss in horses in exactly the same way that it does in humans, right? Okay, I am going to drop the links for a handful of published research studies in the show notes for this episode. So if anyone wants to go a little bit more in depth and download those full papers, they are more than welcome to. And then I will make posts for this episode on both of my social channels, and we can continue the conversation there. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.